Colin is a 7-year-old boy. You can imagine perhaps what a polite young man a 7-year-old boy can be when raised with proportionate measures of discipline and love, how such boys can be well-behaved, self-controlled, and helpful, how you can give them a list of rules and they comply. That is not Colin. You might remember things about 7-year-old boys from your own experience at that age, or you might have tried to forget those things. 7-year-old boys like the word why, and do I have to, and is there anything else for supper? Add to that being the youngest. The oldest child is quiet, the next a little louder. The third turns the volume up way too high. It's Saturday morning, and Colin and I are alone. His brothers are at a track meet and a forensics tournament, respectively. His mother is in Kansas City for the weekend. Together, he and I will do our weekend chores. These chores, of course, include things like laundry and dishes, and picking up the pieces of paper towel that the dog, Jack, has torn to shreds. Jack is officially Quinn's dog. Quinn is 13. Jack, a medium-sized off-white dog with long curly hair, is 3. He's a golden doodle, a mix of golden retriever, poodle, and Labrador. There was a time when such dogs were called mutts. Then someone realized their cuteness could make them money, especially if they had an equally cute name like Golden Doodle. All 3 of Jack's bloodlines are water dogs, and they produce a dog that has webbed feet and loves to swim. Jack loves to swim. Unfortunately, the vet says he has to stay out of the water until his ears clear up from their infection. Every night, Jack and I, we walk by the pond, and every night he wants me to throw a stick out into the middle so he can swim for it the way he used to do, even in the winter when he had to break through the thin ice. He longs to bound in the shallow end and splash and to lie down where the water is only 8 inches deep. Yet every 2 weeks we return to the vet only to learn that his ears are not yet cleared up and he still must stay dry. Sometimes Mittens joins us on our walks. She's the black and white cat who lives at our house. Mittens is Ian's cat. Ian, now 16, does not like dogs. Mittens lives at our house, but like all cats, is her own boss. With spring in full swing, she spends a lot of time outdoors, sneaking through when we come or go. When inside, she crouches under the dining room table, looking, watching, waiting for the sliding door to open. When it presents a chance for escape, she does not miss. When outside, she crouches on the deck under an Adirondack chair, or sometimes on the seat of it, waiting to bolt back in when the opportunity allows. One night last week, she found a chance to escape, but didn't find a corresponding opportunity to bolt back in until I left to go to work the next morning. And sometime in the night, something happened. Since that morning, her eyes don't match. Her right one is always a little dilated, the pupil open wide, even when the left one is a narrow slit. As you know, we have other animals as well. More specifically, ducks. I've been calling them ducklings, but now they deserve to be recognized for what they've become. Ducks. There are 7 of them, and they, unlike Jack and Mittens, live outside. They live outside in a hutch with a short wire fence around it. During the day, we let them out to roam and graze. They root through the tall grass for bugs, chase butterflies, and hop after newly hatching grasshoppers. Earlier this week, one of the white ducks trailed far behind the others, walking crookedly and awkwardly. On closer view, it was obviously hurt, but with no cuts, missing feathers, thorns in feet, or other identifiable injury. Over the course of a few hours, it grew more and more tired, until it simply collapsed in the grass. By evening, it was still where it had been hours earlier, seeming to have given up. I carried it back to the pen next to the water, where it drank intensively and rallied. The next 2 days, we left this duck in the pen while the rest of the tribe explored the yard. Still, it limped. The Augusta Animal Clinic is 10 miles away and is the nearest place for veterinary needs. Saturday mornings, they have walk-in hours, so today, our chores include a trip to the vet, with a dog, a cat, and a duck. One problem with this plan is that we have only one animal carrier. It's big enough to hold both a cat and a duck, but I fear that the result might be a much more difficult set of problems for the vet to resolve. I thought about carrying the duck in one of those cloth grocery bags. It would fit fine. The risk would be if I set it down, the duck might knock it over. I had visions of chasing a limping duck through a parking lot and down a street while Saturday morning drivers swerved, and thought better of that idea. But once you start down a road, it's easier to go farther than it is to turn around and find another. And it's the same way with ideas. If the shopping bag closed at the top, then the duck wouldn't be able to escape. That led to a thought about a brown duffel bag I put my clothes in when I travel. I could zip the duck in, it seemed to me, and leave an air hole just long enough for the duck to stick its head and neck out. This then prompted the thought of a rich, famous heiress carrying a balding dog in a handbag, which I decided was just not my style. I found an empty plastic storage tub in the garage and put wood shavings in the bottom. The sides were a little lower than the top of the duck's neck, which I figured was just about right for a duck that didn't yet have wing feathers to let it fly. Colin took to the chore of getting the duck into the plastic tub with relish. Before I knew it, he'd caught the duck, put it in the tub, and brought it to the van. We haven't named our ducks. Naming animals is a dangerous thing to do. It makes them seem like people, and it cements a relationship. Once an animal has a name, you start to assign it a personality. And once it has a personality, it's no longer interchangeable with another of its type. And once it's not interchangeable, it becomes individually important. It begins to matter if it gets eaten by a coyote or has a condition that's incurable. For these reasons, if one is inclined to name an unnamed animal on the day of a vet visit, one should wait until the return trip, and should never do it on the way there when the prognosis remains unknown. This isn't Colin's kind of wisdom. Colin's view is that once a duck is separated from other identical-looking ducks, it should have a name. So once in the tub, Limpy was named, and began taking on human characteristics. 15 minutes before the office opened, we had a cat in the pet carrier, Jack on a leash in the middle seat, and Limpy in a tub we loaded through the tailgate. Menagerie on board, we started off. Jack loves riding in the car. If a window is open, he pushes his head out. If the windows are closed, he rests in the seat with his head on his paws. Mittens, however, is less tranquil. She yowls and pushes her paws through the holes in the wire mesh door of the pet carrier. Limpy's attitude is somewhat in between. Limpy simply quacks. Colin brought a book to read, a compilation of comic strips. The yowling and the quacking interfered with his focus, and so he added to the noise with repeated, "Are we almost theirs?" and "Do we have to do thises?" We arrived a few minutes after 8 when the office hour started. Already there was a line when I pushed through the door with a carrier in one hand and Jack's leash in the other, followed by Colin carrying Limpy in a tub. 3 people were there first. Others, it would turn out, had checked in and then gone back to their cars to wait with their pets. The 3 that waited with us had more traditional problems than we did. All had only dogs. One walking on 3 legs, one ate a lily and was, according to the owner, as a result sick as a dog. I don't know the problem with the other one. I think it was really a problem with the owner. Her terrier, she said to someone over her cell phone, seemed a little hinky. We took the open chairs at the back corner of the waiting room and set the tub and the animal carrier down. Limpy's head popped up and Mittens thrust her paw through the carrier door to bat at it. The startled duck jumped and quacked, catching the attention of the dogs in the room, who turned their heads and lifted their ears or jumped to their feet. "It's a duck," the girl with a hinky terrier reported to whoever was on the phone. I looked over at Colin, who was sitting upside down in his chair, his feet sticking up and his head dangling down toward the floor. That position changed over the course of the next hour and 7 minutes while we waited. Sometimes it was sitting holding the duck. Sometimes it was trying to encourage Jack to attack it. Sometimes it was taking off his socks and his shoes and wearing them on his hands. Finally, we were called into the examination room.
The vet was a young man,
the age where he still used terms he learned in vet school when talking to people who'd never gone. "I thought that somebody's cell phone was ringing," he greeted me as he saw the duck. "I guess we have a real avian concern." "What order do you want to go in?" "Doesn't matter to me," he replied. It mattered to Melissa, the assistant. "I want to see the duck." The duck's limping, Colin offered as he opened the door of the crate to get the cat out. Melissa held the duck on the table while the vet looked it over and felt through its feathers. One leg's definitely got more muscle development. Feel that difference. And its right hip joint feels hotter. I'm thinking it has a broken femur that's trying to heal. We could take an x-ray. But I don't exactly know how you'd x-ray a duck. And even if I did, I don't know what we'd do about it. I think I'd just let it go and see what happens. That seemed like a good enough idea to me, so we put the duck back in the tub and went on to the next animal. Colin put mittens on the table. She looked down at the duck as the vet examined her. I don't see any signs of any sort of injury to anything. It's probably a neurological issue, a concussion or something. It will either get better or it will be permanent. I don't know that there's really anything we can do. On to the next animal. The vet lifted Jack onto the examination table. Looking in his ears, he said, "He looks good. Nothing more we need to do here." 4 minutes of vet time, and we're ready to go back home, to return the duck and the cat to deal with their own injuries, and to throw a stick to the middle of the pond for Jack to swim after, countless times, until my arm gets sore.